Coming up on Boston Public Radio, first, we lose the national broadcast of our July 4th Esplanade celebration. Now we're losing, can you believe it, first night. Then Callie Crossley weighs in on the Trayvon Martin trial and Paula Deen's using the N-word. David Bernstein tells us about a liquor license fight in Boston. Emily Rooney joins us on Patriots' Aaron Hernandez, plus her world-famous Emily's List. We'll debate whether women get dissed at the car mechanics, and in honor of Tuesday's election, it'll be donkeys versus elephants in our weekly news quiz. That's next on 89.7 WGBH. Day off. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Sue O'Connell, co-publisher.
Yay!
Not the publisher.
Not the publisher.
I want to call you the publisher of Bay Windows, but you are, in fact, the co-publisher of Bay Windows.
Yeah, my business partner, Jeff Coakley. It just, you know, the one thing that drives him crazy is that I get to all the publicity.
And, okay.
You
know. Jeff, we don't want to diss.
No.
Jeff, thank you very much for sitting in.
It's thrilling. This is the first time we've done this.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. We've done it before elsewhere, haven't we?
No.
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 Okay. This is our maiden voyage.
Here we go.
Co-hosting. Don't blow it, Sue.
I won't.
I'll try not to blow it either. I'm more likely the one who will blow it. Anyway, if you guys haven't heard this, you know, we already knew that we've yanked away, or it's been yanked away from us. The Boston fireworks and pop performances used to be on national TV all over the country. No more. That's gone. If that wasn't a big enough blow to our ego, now, to add insult to injury, first night, the city's annual New Year's Eve public celebration, 37 years old, is done, kaput, all over because of donations are being down and the sponsorships in the city are shutting down. So here's our question to you guys. I mean, are we big losers here or what? What is going on? Is the city getting dissed? Are we no longer a world-class city, as people say? Or do you not really care about first night because you never really liked running around in 10-degree weather looking for bathrooms with the kids, you know, on New Year's Eve? I mean, they do have the ice sculptures, they have the music, they have the fireworks and stuff like that. So do you care? Are you insulted? Like two blows in 1 week. Our numbers are 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Do you care about first night? And do you care that on top of losing the 4th of July being broadcast nationwide, we're losing first night, too. I mean, I don't know, Sue. I feel like less of a person today than I did.
Well, you know, first night is one of those things, I think, that we all take for granted. I mean, it is was the first of its kind in the nation.
Yeah.
So it really set there's lots of first nights across the country now celebrating New Year's Eve. I never knew why it was not last night, but instead of first night.
That's a very good point.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Always bugged me. But, you know, it spawned a bunch
right.
of celebrate.
Why is it?
Maybe if they called it set last night.
Why did I never think of that? That's right.
It's not the first night
until 12:30. By that time, all the kids are home.
Morning.
That's
first
right.
morning.
First
by that
morning.
Point.
That's a very good
That'd
point.
That'd be a good one. Anyway.
It should be last night.
But, you know, it was a nonprofit group that ran it. It's not run by the city. It's not run by the state. There's certainly funds that go into it, you know, cultural funds, and the police department get paid and the parade and all that. But it's been a privately funded event that has been kept going by donations and by fees when you buy your buttons and by people contributing for free and by big major corporate sponsors coming in and buying those, you know, those sponsorships that would say first night brought to you by so-and-so or wherever the buttons were sold. That was another place that would do it. And the reality, Marjorie, is in this economic time, you don't get a lot of bang for your buck by sponsoring things like that. You get branding, you get goodwill. Yeah. And if you're watching every penny and how you spend it on your advertising, it's going to affect which ones you underwrite. It's, you know, it's a great event. I didn't go to it until I became a parent. And you're right, you know, the kids in the snowsuits, you know, running around looking for bathrooms. But if you went
There's
to the Heinz.
There's never enough bathrooms in downtown Boston or in the whole Back Bay,
right,
for that matter.
If you go to the Heinz, you could do a day of, you know, arts and crafts with the kids. If you're into alternative music, if as a grown-up, there were some great, I think, I forget the name of the band that played Magnetic something or other, which all the hipsters will know about. They played last New Year's Eve. Lots of folks went to that. And it's a great thing to do. I mean, I, for the past few years, have gone in, gone to dinner or a movie, watched the parade, and gone home with the family. And it's been a fun event.
Our number is 877-301-8970 if you have any nostalgic moments of first night, or if you hated the whole thing from beginning to end. And to get you in the mood of nostalgia, we have a little montage of some great sound from first night. Here it is.
Square and counting down to midnight.
It's nice to be able to parade while you're feeling so warm and not having your fingers fall off.
He's one of the best sculptors in the world.
This is made from two different pieces of ice, one green and one red, and a pocket is cut in here, recessed out, and then the green one is then laid down inside there.
This is the event that sparked first night celebrations all over the country.
Okay, that was first night.
Yep.
That was. It's no more. It's done. Now, Tom Menino has stepped in, as he often does, and says, we're going to take over first night. There's going to be a first night. We're going to make sure there's a first night. What does that mean?
Tom Menino has a fund of money that he gets to spend, you know, from his campaign that he's not going to use. So he could actually fund, I bet, this year's first night just from that fund alone. And then, you know, keep it going for a year and then see if it just gets remade into a different sort of celebration.
Well, they've talked in this story in the Globe this morning about the funding dropping from $880,000 to $263,000 just since 2003.
You know, and these things...
That's before the recession, obviously.
It takes a lot of money to do these things. You know, you have to hire staff. It's not just people volunteering their time. You really need people who know how to get the licenses and to organize the artists, to do the artwork, to place the ads, to get the... I mean, this is a machine that has to be funded.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's sad, but it's unfortunately, we are going to have to get used to losing things that we have viewed to be free and part of our culture because we're not paying for it.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Maybe you have to pay. Maybe you have to pay $50 or $25. Let's take some calls here. Let's go to Dan from Pembroke. What do you think, Dan? Are you brokenhearted about first night, or could you care? Not care less, I should say. You there?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Dan.
It's Andrew from Pembroke. That's all right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Andrew from Pembroke.
No problem. I kind of agree with the whole idea of, you know, I think at some point we're probably going to have to get used to losing out on some of the luxuries. I mean, it kind of stinks because, yeah, it's a nice community event. But at the same time, like, whole country's in this economic depression, and at some point you got to make that choice between, are we paying for, the fun kind of stuff like that, or do we need to put this money towards, you know, something a little more important? I know there's a lot of sponsorship money that gets, you know, that goes towards this stuff, but I'm sure that the city of Boston is going to be footing some of the bill too. And is that money that could be allocated to something more important, like, the new tunnel work that they're going to have to do or stuff like that?
That's
well, you
right.
know, Dan, I
the
don't
Callahan
know how,
tunnel.
Right. I don't know how much money the city or the state has put into it, but that's budgeted money that's approved by, you know, the governor and the senators and our lawmakers that goes in, I believe, to cultural enhancement. So the reality is that this has been, for the most part, an event funded by people who bought buttons to get into certain events, and then not funded by people like me who would just go to the common event to see the fireworks, which didn't happen last year, and see the ice sculptures and just enjoy being in the city. So, you know, it's not a taxpayer-funded event. Although taxes do go into it, it's
for cops and all that stuff.
But again, that's budgeted out already. So we're sort of at a loss, and I'd hate to see people have to pay to do everything, you know.
Dan, have you been to it lately?
I have not.
Andrew, I'm sorry. It's Andrew.
That's all right. I prefer not to go into Boston for
anything
because it's too crowded. Too
well,
busy.
That's
I'd
the thing.
Hang out with friends,
but it's
local.
Fun. It's not that bad.
Andrew,
though.
Thank you for the
thanks,
call.
Thanks,
what
Andrew.
Are you talking about? It's not that bad. That's not a ringing endorsement. Okay.
No, but I mean, if
it's
you hate
pretty
crowds,
bad, but it's not that bad.
It's if you hate crowds, you shouldn't go. But there is something for everyone. If you've got kids or if you're a young adult, you can go to one of the concerts. You can patchwork the parade. You know, I love watching the parade where I can go to get a nice hot cup of coffee or something. But it's part of being in New England, and it's fun. It's one of those great events where you go out and you see everybody. You know, it's not just a certain type of person. It
seems to
everybody.
Me it's either 5 degrees and you're absolutely freezing,
or
it's 45 degrees and you're watching the ice sculptures melt.
But that's also, it's weather-driven. You know,
it
I guarantee that if it's a rainy, cold night, you're not going. And that's... part of the challenge, too. I mean, it's a tough... New Year's Eve is a tough night.
Are you going to go on a rainy,
cold night?
No, absolutely not.
No.
Our numbers are 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. I can't say I'm devastated about the demise of First Night. I took my kids when they were little. It was always a disaster.
You know, but we're missing the whole music scene part of this, probably because we're not out at the clubs. But there are...
No, we're not.
We're not telling anybody.
Sometime for me on the club scene.
What are you doing tonight? I'll come pick you up. I'll go out and do a little... but there's a whole live music part of this that the people volunteer and shows happen and folk music and country music, as well as cultural music, music representing different parts of the world and different communities. You know, and I think that that's... it's the less fun part of it, but it actually is part of the strong cultural part of it.
Okay. You're just more cultural than I am. Paul from Milton, what do you think? Are we a loser city now because they're not going to broadcast the 4th of July nationwide anymore like they did the Esplanade thing, and now we've lost First Night? Are you devastated, Paul, or what?
No. Am I there?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not so devastated about the First Night. I think I went to the first year it happened.
So it's been 36 years for you, huh?
Yeah, well, it shows. You know, it's hard to move around with a wheelchair now.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm kidding. That was inappropriate.
That's okay. You don't have far to go either.
We laughed anyway. So
if you live in Milton, Paul, it's not exactly a long excursion for you.
No, it really isn't.
But you've not, nonetheless.
What do you do anyway? What do you do now? What do you do now on New Year's Eve?
Just celebrate the... A small dinner with family and friends, usually.
Yeah.
Yep.
You
know,
that's nice.
And so that's, you know, that's, I kind of prefer that anyway. I think it's more satisfying. But about the Pops concert on the 4th of July.
Yes.
Frankly, I think they've lost their way. They lost their way about 5 to 10 years ago. They try to be relevant. And the Esplanade 4th of July concert is a patriotic concert. It is what it is, and it doesn't have to be hip. And once they got more sponsors, they tried to be relevant and attract the younger demographic who may or not be there, but they're certainly not watching it on television. I found out that I was turning to watch the Capitol 4 on PBS.
You're absolutely right.
I thought it became more, you know, it was right on point. It's a celebration, a very patriotic celebration, you know, and frankly, having the latest star from, you know, America's Got Talent, whatever the latest talent program is.
Yeah, it didn't
attract some audience, but I think it lost their primary demographic.
Okay, so you would have rather had Tony Bennett there than Paul, huh?
It wouldn't be a bad idea.
You know, I don't have a problem.
How about Harry Connick?
Yeah,
Harry Connick.
I don't have
Thank
a problem
you. Thank
with
you,
the artist. I totally agree with Paul with the direction. I think it was also to get a national audience. The year that they had Dr. Phil and his wife as the MCs was the end of it for me. And I agree. I started watching the other Washington, D.C. concert. I mean, you want to tune in and see patriotic music. This is what it is. And I don't mind having, you know, a American Idol star here and there and make it a little bit of fun and a little bit. But when you had these hosts that came in, like, why is Dr. Phil hosting
in Boston.
The Boston Pops?
I know.
With
He's
his
got
wife.
Nothing to do with Boston.
But what
and
is
the
why?
Other thing is, the Period. Other thing is, I mean, the times I've watched the Boston Pops on television, I've always felt a little pathetic. You know, I thought either I should be there.
No, I've never been there in person. Even when I lived in Mission Hill and could see the fireworks.
You watched it on TV.
We had a TV and we put it out on the porch and watched the fireworks.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. But this year they're having Ayla Brown. I mean, she's a local talent. She was on, you know, American Idol, obviously, a few years ago, but she's a local girl, Boston College graduate and stuff. Obviously, the kid of Senator Scott Brown or a former Senator Scott Brown. So she's a local talent. She's singing patriotic music.
I'm all for the singing. I think it's fine that we don't have a national broadcast anymore.
Well, it doesn't bother
Let's
me
just
either.
Make, keep it ours.
I feel like somehow in the ranking of cities, this is bad for us, you know, to lose First Night and then to lose the national broadcast. It's kind of like on the downhill
even cares?
Slide.
It's like people in Chicago are looking at us like, oh, there they go.
Well, you know, doesn't U.S. News and World Reports rank the best cities? And isn't this part of the rating?
Two events that we don't go to, we're upset that we're losing.
Yeah. We'll be down. We're going to be beaten by Providence.
They'll have that fire water going, and we'll be all over.
They have that great fire thing on the river down there. Yep. What's the river in Providence?
the Providence River.
I live at the Providence. It's not the Providence River, but whatever it is. Someone will call us and
tell
us.
Water.
Okay, Maureen and Newton, what do you think about the demise of First Night?
Hi, Marjorie. Thanks. As a transplant, I've appreciated your perspective, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for calling.
I called in because I've gone to First Night for most of the last 10 years, and I have enjoyed it, but I have observed that funding it properly would really enhance the whole experience, and I feel like it's worth fighting for, and it's worth actually being more of a regional thing of pride, as opposed to an earlier caller, Andrew, who I think from Pembroke, who didn't see the value in it for somebody that lives outside Boston. I think that the loss, I also see the loss of First Night differently than the coverage of 4th of July. I think I trust Emily Rooney's take on it might be a better thing, the loss of coverage for 4th of July, but the First Night parade is something that Boston should be very proud of having thought up.
Yeah.
And the fact that it suffers from a lack of investment, not a lack of creative thought. There's plenty of that on display if you come down.
Well, would you put the money, though? What, I mean, what part do you see would need to have investment to make it better?
Support more and more participation, reaching out regionally and helping different arts groups in different towns come and participate and have it really be an expression, not just of Boston, but of other towns surrounding Boston. And I think that, getting that kind of buy-in.
Yeah,
we don't suffer from a lack of artistic talent or creativity, but we do. It's very tough for artists to make a living. You know?
Yeah, so no, Maureen.
We should get Dr. Phil to host First Night.
For the call.
Dr. Yeah. Phil should host First Night.
Do you think it's got... Do you think it's gotten seedier over the years?
No. I think it's a great family event. I mean, it's what it is. It is what it is. And I think that it's mm-hmm. the kids love being in the parade. They get to go to the Heinz Auditorium.
Do they have enough porta potties?
I generally fast before I go and don't have
because
any water.
Is,
but you know,
that
it is
a
an
big
issue.
Problem.
It is
in downtown Boston.
Plus, you get the kids in the snow shoots.
There's no bathrooms on the Freedom Trail.
I once took one of my nieces to Boston Common when she was little, and she had to go under a tree.
Yeah,
because there was no place to go.
Busloads of tourists come in from out of town on the
to
Freedom
those,
Trail.
Those
no
lavatories we were going to have.
The $250,000 lavatories.
Yeah, what happened to those?
I think they didn't work. Those are the ones where you like
they sprayed the
whole interior of the thing after people.
Because you go to other European, European countries and there's plenty of bathrooms and people aren't living in them and you don't have to.
But you're right. Some of our big the duck boats and the little make way for ducklings for the little kids, and you have a 3-year-old
and there's
kid,
no bathroom.
And where are you supposed to go?
There's nothing. There's nothing. There's a tree. I can show you the tree.
Why don't you get on top of that?
I'm going to get right on that.
Co-publisher.
I'm going to get right on that.
Bay Windows.
Once
do
I get
some
Dr.
editorials
Phil
on that. Okay, Andy from Medway, what do you think about the first night?
You know what? I thought its demise was that it was too diffuse, too much throughout the city. Like, it's a great idea, but, like, having to walk throughout the whole city to go from event to event is part of what killed it for me. You know,
that's
I
a
went
great
a few
point.
Years, you know, and I'm like, if it was just down there in the public garden and Boston Common, you know, and if it was, you know, just one or two, like, intensely active locations, that would have been great. But, you know, mostly it was, like, going in and getting lost in Boston for a few hours. And being really cold.
Yeah,
so,
Jeff, it's funny you say that because it does feel like it's everywhere. And if you were really going to sit with the planner and decide where you wanted to go, there might be an event in Somerville. I think they have events in Somerville as well. Am I right? I think that there's just a wide spread out of everything.
I hope there's nothing in Hyde Park. That would be a little bit much, don't you think?
Well, if you had to go from Hyde Park to East Boston, that would probably do it.
Or Hyde Park from anywhere.
Yeah,
let's face it.
I think focusing it in might be a better, you know, just one kind of event for each, like one folk event or one spot where all the music is. That's a good point, Jeff.
So what do you think? What do you think? Let's wrap this up. Do you feel as though this is a diss to Boston that we're not was it Kevin White, the former mayor of Boston, came up with the idea of world-class city? Can we be a world-class city no celebrations nationally broadcast on 4th of July.
I think the 4th of July thing is fine. I think we're actually better
off.
New York has one. That's fine. I think we're better
Washington has one.
I don't care. I think we're better off having it be our event that we can keep and not have to pander to a larger audience.
Yeah.
We can keep it as it should be and let the Pops do their great stuff and Keith Lockhart. And on the first night issue, I'm positive it will be happening this year. Someone will swoop in and save it if it's Mayor Menino.
Well, he says. Mayor Menino's quoted in the Globe
this
morning. We will have a first night in Boston if we, meaning the city, have to take it over. We will. There's a will and there's a way. So Tom Menino may rescue first night.
And then we'll make a better one. But this is a reality that we're living in. People have to get used to the fact that if advertisers and companies are not going to advertise because they don't have the money, we're going to have to pay for it.
How much would you pay to go to first night, Sue O'Connell?
Well, it depends on what it was. I would buy a ticket and a button, and you know, but I like having it free.
Are the buttons like $10?
Yeah, it's pretty cheap, but I love having it free for kids in the city. I mean, the South End kids love to go to this. So
okay.
That's my
pitch. To be continued. When we come back, we're going to talk to Callie Crossley about the start of the Trayvon Martin trial and also Southern cook extraordinaire Paula Deen's use of the N-word. Plus, some important news that's flown under the radar this week. I'm Marjorie Egan. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
I'm Ibi Caputo. I live here and I report here. I found out where the Boston bombers lived was on my own street.
The normalcy was stunning, given that the street had been cordoned off to residents.
When I was reporting for WGBH Radio from my own block, it really brought home the synergy between living in a community and working in that same community.
FBI, police, and SWAT teams did their work.
Ibi Caputo, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Gentle Giant Moving Company, celebrating more than 30 years of moving antiques and art, including local moving, long-distance moving, full-service storage, and art and furniture restoration. More at gentlegiant.com. And Orchard Cove in Canton, an independent senior community. You can learn how to prepare smart foods from Legal Seafood chefs on Wednesday, June 26th at 1:30 p.m. More information at orchardcovelive.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Here with us in Studio 3 is Callie Crossley, host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Welcome back. Okay. I can't wait to hear about this. Paula Deen, Miss Butterball Turkeys and Miss Cream Pies, Miss Southern Cook Extraordinaire has gotten herself in a little hot water. Do tell, Callie Crossley.
Well, it's a lot of hot water. It's a boiling hot water. One of her employees has filed suit against her and also her brother, Earl Bubba Heyer, and they haven't come out with exact accusations, but some of them that we've heard is that she's accused Bubba of some sexual harassment. And one of the things that Miss Jackson has pointed out, who by the way is white, is that Paula Deen was frequent with the N-word in her interactions all over and was abusive. So Paula Deen had to do a deposition in it. You know, made public, and so here's some of the stuff
by the National Enquirer, which I love. The National Enquirer broke the story.
There you go. So anyway, so she
when
says,
"Get a Pulitzer." Over
I
there,
don't
the
know. I get all the big ones.
In the deposition, she says, "I can't myself determine what offends another person." She is asked, "Does she use the N word?" And her answer is, "Of course," very matter of factly. Then she says, "Yes, she defends telling racial and ethnic jokes. Says she grew up that way. That's just what they are, jokes, and everybody knows it." She then describes for them what she had hoped to, an occasion she hoped to have happen, but realized the media would eat her alive if she did it, which is a Southern-themed plantation party in which all of the waiters would be black and act as slaves. This, you cannot make this stuff up. This is in the transcript. And by the way, she was due to speak to Matt Lauer exclusively on the Today Show, and she was a no-show this morning. Backed
really?
Out of it.
Yeah,
I'm sure if she realized, you know, how hot this is. So anyway, just to put all the stuff on the table and you guys can jump in. Black Twitter has had a field day with this. So some of Paula's best dishes, which is one of her lines, is clan chowder, back of the bus biscuits, and just as a variety. Then they have another another thread called Paula Won't Cook It, Martin Luther King Cake, Cesar Chavez Salad, and Lisa Jackson's Jambalaya. Of course, that's referring to Lisa Jackson, who's bringing the lawsuit. So this is, you know, I have loved Paula Deen, so I'm really, truly,
And
you know,
I interviewed her once,
this.
And I thought she was a hot ticket. I had no idea this was going on with
this
her
is
and
such
Bubba.
This issue in general, this whole Paula Deen story, first of all, you've got this idea and this cultural idea that everyone says the N-word.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
And I've been asking folks, have you ever said the N-word?
Yeah.
And I've said it three times, I think. Twice were academically, you know, and once was because I was in a room of black people and I want to say that word, and I said it, right? Mm. Never in a derogatory way, never in a joke, never referring to anyone
or
about
what
it.
What you would deem a joke.
In any way. I don't know of anyone who's ever, I've never been in a, I know it happens. I'm not saying that racism doesn't exist, but not everyone is sitting at home saying the N-word. And then you've got the Twitter response,
right,
which I think, you know, the democratization of America, that Twitter, everyone's got a broadcast account now, and the satirical response, which I think is the perfect response, from my opinion, of these very funny,
it's very interesting,
very hurt, well, very cutting responses and appropriate responses is just...
But here's the question. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to her business? How much this is going to hurt her? I mean, I think that's going to be the fascinating... Does this wind up being that, you know, her Southern supporters with like-minded racist ideas stand by her and everybody else says, forget it, we're not going to buy her book? I mean, she's got a million books out.
Well, you know, there's a couple things. First of all, we should say that the Food Network has issued a statement which is very careful. Mm-hmm. And they use the language, we are monitoring the situation, meaning we haven't decided yet which way we're coming down on this. Because, I mean, she's an empire on that network.
Huge.
So, and let's not forget, like, the South Beach, you know, food contests and all that. You know, she's really a part of that all over the country. And I just
saw
her
MasterChef. Don't forget her pharmaceutical endorsements, too, with her type, with her diabetes.
Smithfield Ham. She's got cookbooks and pots and, you know, spices and the whole nine yards. So to walk away from that, if you're Food Network, I think you're going to be quite careful about it, even though I think a lot of her advertisers are going to go in a different direction because they don't want to be associated.
If Don Imus went down for his comment, there's no question to me that she should be gone from the Food Network.
I think they're going to have to do something very dramatic. Yeah. These are her own words, which she is
and
not
it's
denying.
It's not one time. Yeah. I mean, this is the issue. Yeah. This isn't I said it one time or I yelled it out by accident or I didn't have my insulin or, you know, this is of course I say it.
Oh, and she doesn't obviously get it. No. She doesn't get it at all.
Now, she's been interviewed by Oprah. I mean, I'd love to hear what Oprah has to say about this.
Al Roker threw that frozen ham at her that time when she got hit in the head on the Today Show.
Maybe that's what did it. Well, she says that she was robbed. She and somebody was robbed, maybe her husband. And I assume then, I guess, the perpetrator was black because she said, you know, on that occasion, she had to use the word. And
The N-word?
Yes. And the deposition, I guess they were asking her, well, why? And, you know,
this is not funny.
I know.
It's like, it drives me crazy,
not.
But it's like it's just astounding.
My guess is she's had it.
My guess is that
she has had it. You just
I
can't.
Don't know. One of the things that we're going to be talking about, because this is going to be a very big discussion on Basic Black tonight, is really this
7:30.
Yes, 7:30. The mix of culture and history for some.
Yep.
And it was interesting. A very thoughtful essayist wrote a piece about this saying, look what happened in the accidental racist song with LL Cool J and Brad Paisley.
Yep.
And, you know, the point they were trying to make is the flag, the Confederate flag, means one thing to this group of people, but they don't want to accept that it means something else to another group of people. But what do you answer to people who say, well, that's part of my history? And other people say, what are you talking about?
Boston with the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yes.
There's no doubt.
That's
like,
true.
People say, I'm marching in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which does not allow gay and lesbian groups to march because it's my tradition. It's my culture. It's my neighborhood. And we Northerners who, you know, we get this attitude like, oh, we're so much better than the Southerners because we understand about the Confederate flag. But I'm going to go ahead and march in the St. Patrick's Day Parade because it's my tradition. And the complicated relationship that Southerners have, all Southerners, with the Civil War or the War of Northern Aggression, as they like to call
That's
it.
That's right.
You know, and where their grandfather served and the marriages of, you know, one was an abolitionist and one fought for the Confederacy. And my grandfather owned slaves, but they were all in the house and they were
but
all,
I would
you know.
Guess, yeah. I would guess that if she had regional sponsors, Totally. I cannot imagine big national companies.
You cannot be a person
to be associated
of this level.
With someone who thinks it
think.
Would be fun to have African Americans dress up as slaves for a wedding.
I mean, and your answer is, of course.
I find
she's
going to
be
yeah.
out of her mind.
Kelly, I find the slave part of that
right.
so much more offensive than
a
her
lot of
saying
people
the
have
N
said
word.
That.
I
yes.
mean, I just, I,
yeah.
I, not that I condone or understand, but the idea that, I mean, I think about, what's his name, who did Durango Unchained, Tarantino.
Tarantino,
and
yeah.
how sensitive he was about filming this movie about slavery, having African Americans acting as slaves. And I think he had dinner with Sidney Poitier and said he wanted to film the movie somewhere else because if it was in America, it was would be too loaded for him. And Sidney said, no, keep it in America. Experience it. You know, mm-hmm. feel what you feel and move on. And to me, it's just that is just so immoral to me that she would even think of doing that. We're not that far, you know, at
and remember,
some point.
She volunteered this information. This is
yeah,
what's
yeah.
so bizarre just, about it. It's like, I would love to have it. And they look so nice in their bow ties. It was really bizarre conversation.
I shouldn't give her any publicity at all, but I am wondering while we're in the context of Paula Deen, anything particular you think is a real specialty in terms of her recipe to me?
I mean, she's a... To my eye, to this point, she's a really good Southern cook.
Yeah,
she does
she
those
is.
Dishes very well. I mean, that's her expertise. Now, a lot of people always said that if you went to the restaurant, and I've been to the restaurant a couple times in Savannah, that everybody, and this is true, everybody in the back is black. All the cooks are in black, which is interesting.
Yeah, I wonder where she
but
got
that's
those
not
recipes.
Surprising. I've heard that too.
Wait a minute. What yeah. about the wait staff? Is the wait staff
the
all white?
Staff, no, the wait staff was kind of mixed.
Yeah, oh, okay. but the black yeah, folk right. are cooking because yeah. it's their recipes.
Right. The way it's when I was there, but you know, now I was there just in the last yeah. few years. I don't yeah. know how it started.
Well, you're a Southern girl,
absolutely.
So how big is this? I mean,
it's
we're
a big
in Boston.
Deal to me. I think this is
and it's a big
this,
deal in the South.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, but you know, now what's interesting is some of the commenters, which you learn a lot, or sometimes, and some of the commenters have just sort of said, "Well, that's what you expect from that part of the country," and others have, I think, appropriately responded saying, "I'm sorry, you know, that's
I'm
not
Southern,
we're not no, that's not going down that
See,
way."
See, that's the other part of this that she takes with them is that,
right.
you know, like, you know, we're Northerners, you know, we're Northern girls. We can make fun of a brother named Bubba.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course she's going to say that she's Southern, but there's a whole bunch of people who don't think that way, that
I
don't act that way.
Imagine.
And then she just crashes them as well, you know?
Well, let's move on to Trayvon Martin, because this is going to be a fascinating trial.
Yeah.
I think it starts on Monday.
Yes.
And an odd jury mix, if you ask me. What's up with
Not so much a mix. That's what I think. It's all women, and one. What's interesting in watching the reports, people say some people say, some reporters say, sources say, and then if you keep reading, you realize it's the same
Source.
Person that must
yeah.
be sitting in a courtroom
yeah.
saying this woman looks Hispanic. So everybody's saying she looks Hispanic, half yeah. Hispanic, half black, but
hold
nobody
on.
Knows.
Hold on, I've been remiss as a radio talk show host here. I should have explained the Trayvon Martin case. Trayvon Martin, in case people have forgotten, was the young man. Was he 16 or 17 when he was shot? One or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
By George Zimmerman, this 29-year-old kind of self-appointed neighborhood watch guy. Zimmerman said it was self-defense, that he thought he was going to be grievously injured by Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin was unarmed, just coming back from the store. He had, you know,
Skittles and an iced tea.
Exactly.
He was
and
unarmed.
Absolutely unarmed. There is this weird thing down in Florida, though, the Stand Your Ground law, which says, I think it is a very odd piece of legislation, which says that if you believe that you are in grievous harm, you have the right to defend yourself. I don't understand how you have the right to defend yourself with a gun, a 9mm gun. He shot this kid one time in the head, Zimmerman did, when someone is unarmed. But I think those are going to be the issue is going to be whether or not George Zimmerman felt he was in danger of losing his life.
Whether it was self-defense or not. And we should say that Stand Your Ground is not just in Florida. It's in other states as well.
It's very creepy,
right.
if you ask me. Well, but go ahead about the jury.
So the jury, you know, there was much to do as it was with the Whitey Bulger trial here about who would be on how we were going to pick a jury. I actually thought they should change the venue. I'm surprised they didn't. But be that as it may, it's being held in the same place where the incident occurred. A lot of people are aware of it, but they found some jurors. A couple of them were from transplants, so they said they're not even paying attention. They don't even know Florida that well. So they went with all women. And one woman who... by eyeballing someone in the courtroom, thinks she may be half black, half Hispanic. Now, there are four alternates, and in the alternate group, there is one white guy, and I think one black man, and the other two are also women. So it's very interesting.
So there's one African-American, including the jury and the alternates?
Yeah, well, we don't know.
Somebody
sitting in the courtroom says, by looking, she looks half black, half Hispanic.
Okay.
Trust me,
Italian.
Some of those white women that they're describing as white could be Hispanic, too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
What's happening in our communities, around our city, and in our neighborhoods? That's what we check out each week on Under the Radar.
Defense and prosecution are finding appealing about having this. You know, that's sort of, to me, what it gets to.
Well, I took it two ways. I decided that I think a jury expert said they really try to avoid black women. So I do know that. Because they think that they're very...
tough on crime?
Well, and sensitive, too. And now you would have a black woman identifying with a young man who was just
killed.
Yeah. I'm Callie Crossley.
In this case,
I hope you'll join me for Under the Radar tomorrow evening at 6:30 here on 89.7 WGBH.
It depends on the case about where they want to come down on having women on the case. In this one, I would have thought, you know, having some men on the jury made sense because there's a lot of macho stuff being talked about here.
But there's also a lot of fear. I mean, if I play the devil's advocate, if I was defense.
But a mix. Well, why would you have a mix?
Well, the one jury trial I served on,
the 24-hour cable news cycle puts so many stories into overdrive every week. While there are important issues going under the radar.
And it turned out that the whole thing hinged on whether a cop was telling the truth or not. And, of course, we all said, no, he isn't.
Yeah.
That's
very interesting. So
We're talking with Callie Crossley. Under the Radar is every Sunday night at 6:30. Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. And also Sue O'Connor for Jim Brady. You know, I wonder, Callie Crossley, have you followed this whole Trayvon Martin menacing
I'm Callie
picture?
Crossley. I hope you'll
scenario.
Join me for Under the Radar later today at 6:30 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Well, there, you know, as you can imagine, the defense and some other people have come forth with some pictures of Trayvon Martin in which he looks older and use the word menacing. And I would say that any young black man who does not have a very sweet picture, I mean, going the other way, is going to be thought of as menacing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the nature of the beast.
And in a lot of pictures of him in a hood.
So you pretty much can go that way with any other picture unless you almost look angelic, because that's just the bias and the stereotype. So there's been a lot of kerfuffle about that, both in media and how those pictures were played, which is why came back to say somebody in the courtroom is making an assessment about this woman's race, and I'm not comfortable with that because she's not said what she is. So we just have to be careful about all of these landmines that are out there as we, you know, go into this, and particularly how it's phrased, how it's said, because that can lead people down one path. And I don't think this jury is sequestered. Maybe they are. I can't remember if they are or not.
Usually it's not, at least until they're contemplating the verdict.
Exactly. So I don't know. This is very interesting. So, what I think is interesting is there are some mothers and there's one unemployed woman, at least, on the panel.
So is this going to have the whole race discussion that we're always going to have when cases like this come forward? We never have it?
I think we're going to have some of it because... yeah, I think we'll have some of it because it'll be very interesting to see, you know, if they talk at the end of it, you know, what their perspective.
You know, the
was
other part of the stand your ground defense is that it very rarely gets used as a defense for black people.
Right. That's
you know, there's not a lot of African American people shooting people to stand their ground when they're getting it's usually a white man. And I know Zimmerman is not fit the stereotypical profile, but it's basically, you know, what white people use after they shoot people.
Well, he's been described
themselves.
As a white Hispanic, by the way.
Well, that's been another big controversy. Yeah. He's been a white Hispanic. Yeah. He's been Hispanic. He's been white. He's been all
over
the place.
You know, the whole Hispanic thing, you know, I don't know when we're going to get to a point. I'm finally happy that I don't see all American used when describing white, blue-eyed people anymore.
Yeah.
Like they actually use it for other reasons now, like other people. But I don't know when we're going to get to a point in America where we can understand that you can't tell what someone is by looking at them.
I know.
Right?
This is what I'm saying.
And the Hispanic idea, you know, there's no such thing as Hispanic. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people from different parts of the world, and even within those countries have different lineages. So, you know, Hispanic means nothing except you come from one of these countries or your lineage is one of these countries. And it can be Spain. It can be Portugal.
Well, you're speaking history and ethnicity. And in America, as we know, race is a social construct.
Right.
So these are our social constructs that we put together, and that's what we operate in.
Well, after
regard to Marjorie's question, will we have the conversation about race within our social contract conversation? Yes, we're going to have it. And it'll be very interesting to see. Now, there's already been some preliminary rulings about what can be in and what can be out. And by the way, the defense attorney, and I'm blanking on what happened, but he got slapped down for making a mistake, which he admitted to prior to this. So it'll be interesting to see how the judge determines what gets in, what gets out, mm-hmm. because they are sitting exactly in the same area where the incident took place. And, you know, I'm of a mind that when you have a really heated situation like this, maybe a different venue is better. I mm-hmm. don't know.
So what's under the radar Sunday night at 6:30?
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts put together a special commission on what they call unaccompanied homeless youth. These are just homeless young people. I didn't realize we never had a commission before. And it was established at the end of last year. And they came out with their inaugural report a couple of months ago. And we're just going to dive deep into looking at, you know, what do the numbers mean? And some of them are kind of startling. I mean, you would know there would be a difference.
How old are these kids?
Well, you know, you've hit at one of the points. It's very hard to define what unaccompanied youth means. So right now they're defined it as a person 24 years of age or younger who is not in a physical custody or care. But they had to work that out to figure out what that is.
You know, because you're talking about 14-year-olds.
Well, they age out of foster care. Right. They get kicked out of their homes because they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And they don't have anyone taking care, looking out for them, I think, is the...
And one of the overarching issues also is that, you know, it's just being homeless brings up all these other issues. So that, you know, they're really grappling with what people in poverty who have homes are grappling with on many other issues.
And
other
have some support.
Have some support. So it's there as that. And we're talking about it with, I'm using two journalists who focus regularly and deeply on social justice issues. So
terrific.
This will be very good.
That's Callie Crossey. She's the host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossey. You can hear her every Sunday night at 6:30. You can also hear her tonight at 7:30 on Basic Black talking about Paula Deen and her butterball full of trouble for using...
We call it butter-baked bigotry.
Butter-baked bigotry. Okay. I love that. So do you kind of get glazy-eyed when people start talking about liquor licenses? Well, you shouldn't, because there's a great story about liquor license and fighting over them in Boston. David Bernstein is going to join us to explain why this is an issue that really matters to anybody living in Boston. That conversation is next, 89.7 WGBH. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. Jim Browdy has the day off. I am being ably assisted by Sue O'Connell, co-publisher of Bay Windows. And what is Bay Windows? What do we call Bay Windows?
You like to call it the biggest gay paper in
the
world.
I do.
We appreciate that. But we are the largest weekly serving the LGBT community in the New England area. And we also have South End News, the best little neighborhood newspaper in Boston.
Okay. Well, we have been obsessed with the Bulger trial and First Night and Aaron Hernandez, the Patriot player that's in a little bit of hot water, a lot of hot water, too. But many of you may not know this, and I didn't know this either. New liquor licenses in Boston have to be approved by the state, which is really bizarre, if you ask me. You've heard of these food deserts, you know, there's no, like, supermarket in the neighborhood, and people can't get to a supermarket, and they end up having to go to these little convenience stores. It's very expensive. Well, there's this liquor desert, really, in wide swaths of Boston, where there's very few restaurants selling alcohol at all, and it's really hard to open a new restaurant and sell alcohol. David Bernstein of WGBH and Boston Magazine is here to tell us about the latest development in the battle to get more liquor licenses for Boston. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. So tell us what happened. You know, tell us first, before you tell us what happened with Ayanna Pressley and the City Council, tell people about this whole deal where there's whole big sections of Boston without any liquor licenses.
Well, the way that liquor licenses work, and we're talking primarily about, restaurants and bars and other, places that would sell to drink there, at the facility. there are a certain number of liquor licenses for each city, township, whatever, and that's all handled by state. And so, and of course, the cities also have some control also. But in the case of Boston, there's basically a cap on the number that Boston has been at for a long time, and that the state never wants to raise, or they'll occasionally, you know, and then raise it a little bit, and then those, you know, those however many extras get snatched up pretty quickly. And the way that it works is there are those number, you really can't get any more if there are no more out there available. So you have to find someone who has one but isn't using it anymore because it's transferable. So you find someone who, for instance, what happens is someone who had a restaurant and had a liquor license for the restaurant and then closes down that restaurant or is in the process of closing the restaurant will sell their liquor license. And basically it ends up being this huge like auction, you know, so they go for enormous amounts of money. And so the bottom line is that obtaining a liquor license to open a new restaurant or bar or whatever it might be turns out to be enormously difficult and expensive, particularly in parts of town where they really need some of these to open to be sort of the centers of economic development. You know, you want a place where people are going to go to stores and whatever. You sort of need restaurants and that sort of thing to anchor that.
Aren't you talking about Dudley Square? Isn't that the notoriously liquor license-free zone in the city that the ex-senator Diane Wilkerson got in a lot of trouble over? Remember, she was stuffing the cash in her bra over trying to get help a guy get a liquor license in Dudley Square. That's a predominantly
exactly
predominantly black area of Boston. Are they like without any restaurant with a liquor license at all? Or what's the deal in Dudley Square?
There are very, very few. That's a particular spot that she was talking about. And this is exactly, you're exactly right, that this is what led to the particular piece of corruption that, you know, she got caught for was this whole process of, trying to get if liquor licenses were more available, there wouldn't have been somebody trying to bribe someone to get a hold of something, you know.
David, what do other states and what do they do? I mean, did they base it on population? Do they review? I know that some towns obviously are dry and don't allow liquor licenses, but,
right.
You know, what I know ends up happening is a mom and pop restaurant might sell their liquor license and the cost gets so high that only a major chain or group can buy the liquor license, which also not only, you know, shuts out areas of the city from having good restaurants or any restaurants, it also shuts out the mom and pops from owning things.
Well, and that's part of this. True, you're absolutely right. One of the reasons that you find the liquor license basically end up staying with, you know, very big entities or downtown where they're going to be able to make a lot of money, you know, places that are in a location, or like the South End. There are parts of the South End where a restaurant's going to have the kind of cash flow to make it worth it. But it's going to be very hard, like you said, for sort of a mom and pop, you know, to open up a little, you know, Caribbean joint down at Grove Hall or something like that.
Yeah, that sells beer.
We're talking
about. It's exactly right. And other places, you know, it really varies a lot. I'm not a big expert on this, but it's interesting because when you go to meetings, you know, sort of neighborhood meetings, politicians, you know, officeholders sometimes have these little things of, you know, how do we support development, neighborhood development in Boston? This always comes up time after time after time, year after year after year, of the lack of liquor licenses and the difficulty and expense of getting them. And one of the things, just quickly, is that it's been in the control of the state, and the state does not necessarily, the state legislature and state officials don't necessarily have the same interests as Bostonians. And in fact, one of the problems for a number of years was Mike Morrissey was the head of the particular state legislative body that handled this. And he's from Quincy, and his constituents didn't want a lot of restaurants and bars opening up over in Boston that they would lose business to. So you can see some of the problems pile up.
We're talking with David Bernstein, political analyst here at GBH and a contributing editor for Boston Magazine. So, David Bernstein, what happened yesterday regarding liquor licenses in Boston that's newsworthy?
Yeah, this was in Wednesday at the weekly.
Oh, Wednesday, excuse me.
Yeah, no, it was at the their weekly city council meeting. Ayanna Pressley introduced what's called a home rule petition that really she's been working on with a lot of other people for a good year or so, and basically it would eliminate the whole state-run cap on Boston. It would change state law to eliminate that cap, and it would push the decision-making on new licenses essentially down to the city so that the city could determine. So it wouldn't just sort of open it up completely and say everybody can have as many liquor licenses as they want and they can open up as many bars as they want all over town, but it would push it down to the city level and create rules so that, you know, city officials could determine. And it also tries to establish things so that there would end up being a certain number of liquor licenses within certain empowerment zones, for instance, and other, you know, sort of underserved areas.
You know what's amazing is the numbers. Here in Boston, there are 1,030 liquor licenses. 355 of them are for beer, wine, and cordials, and 675 are for full licenses. And they're selling anywhere from a one-time fee of $245,000 to $450,000 per license. So to open a business, you know, that will serve beer or wine, you would have to be able to pony up at least $250,000.
And David, I'm not sure what the incentive is for the legislature to give a great deal to Boston. I mean, does this have any chance at all? And where the heck has Tom Menino been on this? Mr. Power Broker, I mean, doesn't he want to have, you know, nice development in places like Dudley Square or Grove Hall that could use a nice restaurant with a liquor license for people to hang out in on the weekends and take their kids to and stuff?
Well, you might think that. However, and to answer your question very quickly, before going into the explanation, Tom Menino has given no indication. They would not respond to my inquiries at the mayor's office about it, and I'm told by folks involved at City Hall that he has made no indication privately. They haven't been able to get any word from him on he's going to go on it. He has generally opposed this kind of change in the past, but there's some thought that he may go along with it.
We used to call him in the gay community, as much as we adore Tom Menino, we would call him Mayor No Fun. You know, this is a man who doesn't want the MBTA operating overnight because people will go out and party. He once said famously on the Boston Neighborhood Network, listen, if you're out after 1 o'clock, you're going to get in trouble anyway, so go home. So
yeah, but it's an economic development issue, it seems to me. So go ahead, David.
Well, it also is an issue where a lot of people who he works with and knows and has been very close with in the past, people who own restaurants downtown, who have developments downtown that are based on, you know, traffic being in those particular areas, foot traffic and, you know, people going out, as well as other interests, including, by the way, the legal firms that make a lot of money representing. There are certain legal firms that basically act as the brokers on all these all these deals.
Anyway, it's big money.
There are a lot of interests who are being served now who are not necessarily to be served under a new scheme. The status quo always serves a certain number of people who are close to the status quo.
So the bottom line here is that the small mom-and-pop business person is getting the shaft here.
And has been.
And while we take care of the – I mean, you look at the Boston
and the
waterfront.
I mean, more importantly, the neighborhoods.
I mean, how many liquor licenses have been granted down in the new waterfront district? I mean, God, there's a big, huge Legal Seafoods there. There's that Mexican place there.
When I lived in Mission Hill, we really wanted to get – this is, you know, in the 90s. We really wanted to get a good business to come in because there's no reason to go to a neighborhood if you don't have a business to go to. This is before all the development. And, you know, we were shocked to find out, you know, a lot of our neighbors didn't want a Kentucky Fried Chicken to come in. They wanted a Bertucci's or if it had to be a chain. And we were shocked that the best we could do would be a fast food restaurant because of the liquor license issue. I mean, how is a neighborhood supposed to get ahead?
So, David Bernstein, is there a champion of this? Is one of the mayoral candidates? I mean, Ayanna Pressley is not running for mayor.
The liquor license candidate?
Yeah,
is there the education
liquor,
candidate?
Exactly.
Well, this is actually one of the things that might actually help push this. The city councilors have pretty much all signed on. When Pressley introduced it, they pretty much all signed on in agreement with it, including the four who are running for mayor, John Conley, Felix Arroyo, Charles Yancey and Rob Consalvo. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to champion it, but they signed on that they're going to vote for it. They signed as sort of co-sponsors. So they're in favor of it. And I think that it can be, and I'm sort of trying to push it forward and get it some attention, and I'm hoping others will, like yourselves, so that the mayoral candidates will take position to champion it in talking about neighborhood development, because it is important. And it's important if they think that it's wrong, if they think it's the wrong approach, that they should say that. But I think it can be part of this mayoral debate and should be. I think that you see, I wouldn't be too surprised, for instance, if you see Marty Walsh, who has talked a lot about sort of arts, culture, and tourism. He was the first one to jump on this this thing about First Night possibly being canceled and saying that he, you know, so I think you might see him pushing it, and that would mean you have a champion potentially in the legislature helping out.
Good.
He's the state rep there. So, so that's, I think that the mayoral race is a way that it could become a bigger, you know, more prominent issue, and again, maybe put a little pressure on Tom Menino to come out, which would be a big thing.
Well, David, thank you very much for bringing this to us, because it wasn't in the Herald today and it wasn't in the Globe. I haven't seen it in either paper.
Well, we had all those condoms in the public schools we had to talk about 10 years too late.
There
ten
has
years,
been a lot of news going.
Yeah, 10 years later, we finally got that. So.
David, thank you for being with us. David Bernstein is a political analyst here at WGBH, and as I said, a contributing editor as well as Boston Magazine. And Boston Magazine is where he wrote this piece about this liquor license scandal. I think it is a scandal. Mm-hmm. Up next, it is Open Mic with Emily Rooney. We're going to hear the latest updates on Aaron Hernandez and then hear Emily's world famous, Emily's lists. Just want me to call them complaints. I guess I call them observations. Whatever it is. Stay tuned for Emily Rooney on 89.7 WGBH. I'm Marjorie Eakin, and you are listening to Boston Public Radio.
Whether it's a stroll along the Seine or croissants on the Champs-Élysées, Paris is a city known for romance. And Paris is one of four European destinations you might visit when you support Boston Public Radio before June 30th. Make a contribution in any amount, and you'll be entered to win your choice of a 7-day trip for two to London, Paris, Rome, or Istanbul, courtesy of Rick Steves Tours. But hurry, the contest ends June 30th. Enter to win when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
WGBH programs exist because of you and the Boston Speaker Series presented by Lesley University, offering 7 evenings at Symphony Hall with a lineup of speakers that includes a prime minister, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a humorist, and even a former spy. BostonSpeakerSeries.org. And Seasons 4, the outdoor living store in Lexington, featuring over 100 styles of outdoor furniture, plus a large selection of plants, statuary, and garden accessories, on Mass Ave in Lexington and online at seasons4.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows is sitting in for the vacationing Jim Browdy. And joining us, this is my favorite segment every week, as she does every Friday, is Emily Rooney of Greater Boston and Beat the Press tonight at 7 o'clock. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Marjorie. Sue, good to be
Emily.
Here.
So the plot thickens.
I know. But I'm obsessed with this story.
Aaron Hernandez, the New England Patriot that's in some hot water, possibly or possibly not, involved in a murder investigation.
It turns out that there has been no arrest warrant issued. That, according to the Boston Globe, I'm going to go with their analysis of this. There was a report earlier today that he was going to be picked up on obstruction of justice charges or something. I mean, clearly he's not cooperating. That much we do know. But this, you know, the fact that he destroyed the security system inside his house, that he smashed his cell phone. We had reports of someone that we know who saw him in the Blue Hills early Monday morning. Plus, they think the murder took place in that industrial park around 3:30. I mean, he knows this guy well. He was out partying with him the night before. Four people went out, including another former Patriot, Sunday night to party. Three of them came back. That's all we know.
Well, you know, both Dan Shaughnessy in the Globe and Ron Borges in the Herald this morning talked about, you know, what happened to the vaunted Kraft family values kind of thing, the late, great Myra Kraft. Remember years ago when Christian Peter was about to be a member of the Patriots?
That's why they got Tebow.
Yeah, that's why they got Tibor to bring back a little family values.
I mean, I don't think you can pin this on this. And I'm sure that they talk about it all the time, you know, team values and team first and all that. But how are you going to prevent some guy, you know, from going off the deep end on his own? I mean, he's had some problems in the past.
Right.
And no question they've talked to him about that. And, you know, they got to be unsuspecting that he would get involved. And I don't think they knew the details of that shooting in February. I got to believe they didn't
know
that.
That's where he allegedly shot a fellow passenger in the face.
Yeah, blew his eye out.
Yeah. Listen, you know, Dick Cheney does the same thing. So no one is worried about the entire, you know, government going down.
Yeah. But I guess the thing is, do you, I mean, this was to quote Borges and, or to paraphrase Borges and Shaughnessy, do you take people on your team like this? I mean, do you take people that have very troubled past? And some people would argue that a lot of these guys have troubled past. If you didn't take kids with troubled
NBA
past.
The NBA wouldn't have a team.
Right.
If they, you know, if that was one of the litmus tests, you know, a troubled past. I mean, what are you going to do?
Or do you think this is the passing of Myra, who's no longer there to
supervise? Well, but seriously, why do we hold sports teams to a higher standard than we do other companies and bankers? And, I mean, there are criminals. I agree to Emily's point. Some of these guys and women too, they get a lot of money early. They don't finish college. You know, they're pumped up as being heroes. Yeah. They don't make good decisions. You know, but
they have no idea what to do with money.
But at the same time, you know,
why would they get involved with a criminal enterprise? I'm not saying he was.
Well, you
but
get
why
hangers
would they,
on, and
if,
you know,
if they are making all this good money and they're held in such high esteem, I don't know. Just you know, poor judgment, I think, is what you said,
Emily. Should the helicopters be the news helicopters be following?
I mean, this is driving me crazy.
I was glued.
We're going to talk about that tonight.
Tell people what it was.
Yes. So yesterday afternoon, when right after Aaron Hernandez left his house in North Attleboro, the helicopters went up. Channel 4 and 25, Fox 25 and WBZ share a helicopter. So they were both taking video from that. And then Channel 5 had its own. Channel 7 had its own. So they were following this. And it was eerily similar. It was 19 years ago this week, mm-hmm. the infamous Bronco chase with O.J. Simpson. This guy is driving a white SUV.
Yeah, white car.
I personally found it riveting. But I mean,
I too.
Was it overkill? Yeah.
Well, I found it riveting too.
But the anchors had nothing. No, but what was happening is we were getting bad information. Yeah. Well, he might be on his way to turn himself in at the state police. He might be doing this. Now he's getting gassed. So the commentary became mundane and incomprehensible. And half the time, people didn't even know where he was, you know, what part of the highway he was on, unless you passed a sign that said Dedham or something. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't even know where he was.
So, Emily Rooney, you're a former news director. In a competitive situation, when you ran the newsroom at Channel 5, in a competitive situation with Channel 7, do you call back your cameraman at, when Aaron Hernandez turns
well,
into
I
the
have
gas
to say,
station?
I give WBZ credit for doing just that. They said, you know what, the news value on this is nil, and we're making fools of ourselves. We're doing commentary on things we have not. We don't know what we're talking about. Until we have the correct information, we're going to dial back. I'd like to think I would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're putting your anchor people in a very bad situation, you know, forcing them to speculate. You know, no one's helping you. You know, there's nobody talking, saying this is what's happening.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to off the cuff do what they can see by signage and that kind of thing. A gas station, it's all, you know, obvious, but they're what you're looking at. But, you know, I have to say that the news value was minimal, although we were all glued to it.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, me too, but I didn't feel good about it.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm giving you a pass.
That's how I feel when I watch Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yeah,
I
think it's not good for you.
Yeah, this is very, very bad. But you can see why people get hooked on it.
It's like Cheetos. Yeah.
It is. It's just like Cheetos. You're a big fan of those Cheetos.
I like Fritos, actually.
Fritos, I'm sorry. Fritos.
I like the Housewives, though.
So let's get down to my favorite thing of every week, Emily's List. Can we have our little song that introduces Emily's List, please?
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
Okay, that's not song. That's not a song. What is that?
It's a
montage.
It's a rap.
Okay, it's a rap.
We should make a rap.
All right, I'm going to start with something that you've already talked about today, but I'm sorry, but I don't think anybody pointed out the obvious. Did either of you realize that there is a full-time office for First Night.
Yes.
Year-round.
Yes, I did.
I did not know.
I had no
idea.
And that is sad and pathetic and useless. And I'm not sorry to see that go. And I do not believe for one second that this event is going to disappear. The office is disappearing. Those people's salaries are disappearing. But this will continue in another way without that kind of overhead, period.
The event isn't going to go away. See, I agree. The event isn't going to go away. But it's always been – it's not a public – it's been a nonprofit entity that runs it. And people are acting like –
A year-round – I could pull that party together in 2 weeks. I'm sorry. Give me a break.
No, but here's the question.
Meet the new executive director of First Night, Emily Rooney.
You live in the Back Bay. Yeah. I mean, how many times have you actually ventured out on New Year's Eve to look at the ice sculpture or watch the parade?
I usually go to the fireworks at 7 o'clock are really cool.
The fireworks are good.
They're early. They're in Park Square. Yeah. I've been to that.
Okay.
But I don't have young children, so I don't go to the events. But I like the events.
When your daughter was young, did you drag her down there?
No, because I lived in Newton.
Oh, okay. Well, God forbid you have to come in from Newton. I just never found it fun. I guess somebody pointed out when we talked about this before, you have one event at the corner of Arlington and in Commonwealth Avenue. You have another event down at Gloucester Street.
Well, you can't make it the whole night. I mean, every time I've done it, it's been in pieces. Like last year we went to see Les Mis. Movie theater, and then we came out and we saw the sculptures. There were no fireworks, and we went to dinner at California Pizza Kitchen.
There were fireworks. They were 7 o'clock.
Last year there were?
7 o'clock. Okay. They're very early. Anyway, the event will continue. We already talked about 4th of July. We're not going to miss that televised broadcast. Mm-mm. That was a disaster.
But you don't see this as any kind of diss to Boston that we're not a world-class city anymore.
It was awful television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why it went away. It was awful.
It was awful.
It was awful.
Okay, that takes care of that.
All right, speaking of summer events. Yes. I mean, is summer your favorite time of year? I mean, how can anybody deny us that? And we're just getting going. It's gorgeous. I opened my G section of the Boston Globe on Monday. And talk about Debbie Downer. At the front page of the Globe is summer dangers. And, how to avoid them. Things like how to avoid drowning. I can think of a way. How to avoid sunburn. The 5 dangers you can prevent. Bug bites.
Oh, geez.
This is like, give me a break.
Oh, Jesus. This West Nile virus is rearing its ugly head.
That we should be concerned about when we're just getting psyched about summer. I have to say, they made up for it later in the week on Thursday. The front of the G section was summer cocktails.
There you go. If you have enough cocktails, you don't worry about the bug
bites.
But
it's like these trend stories and these things that people go after. It's like, let's think of a good summer story. How about danger?
But having lived at Ground Zero for West Nile virus, over there in Brooklyn, they always find some crow
one
staggering,
crow. Dead
staggering
crow in the road.
Yeah, nobody ever got West Nile virus or SARS or any of those.
But you know what they did? They sprayed the whole town, and you were in a panic.
But that's the story. It's not, that's a sidebar. That's not a feature. That's a community newspaper sidebar. Yeah. It's not.
What? We're spraying West Nile?
No, the five things to look out for.
No,
yeah. That's it.
We all know we're. Yeah, but you know what we're doing? In classic example, now everybody's like sunscreening up to the nines. Everybody's sunscreening their
now
kids.
Now we have vitamin D deficiency.
Exactly. Vitamin D deficiency.
That should have been one of the summer dangers.
Yeah. Vitamin D. Are you going to get scurvy? What are you going to get from vitamin D deficiency? Be like the people on the base.
All right,
moving on.
This is probably going to surprise you both. I do not approve of handing out condoms in public schools.
There you go.
I do not
approve. Sister Emily Aloysius.
I do not approve.
Are you going to provide the babysitting?
I mean, there's a lot of other social things at schools.
Why don't you?
Because what are you going to do? Do the sex education class and then hand it out? Am I going to have to go to your office, Marjorie, and ask you, the school nurse, for the... It just doesn't have the parents do it. It's one of those things that the school should not be involved in.
If the parents did it, they wouldn't think about doing it. But here's what I don't think that any kid is actually going to go to the nurse's office and ask for a condom. So I think it's one of these things. I mean, I'm sure some will, but it's one of these things that they send the message that you should use a condom if you're going to have sex. So what it ends up being is part of the educational process, that it's okay to use a condom.
All right, you convinced me.
No, wow. No. You know what I? Here's
no,
the,
no,
here's the one reason.
It's none of their business.
I was always a little bit. I mean, I do think these days it's a good idea, but I always thought if you are a girl and you really don't want to have sex, and the boy who is pressing you and pressuring you to have sex didn't have a condom, that was your out. You could say, "I'm too afraid of getting pregnant. I'm too afraid of getting disease."
I'm not going to do this.
But that's another issue for the health class, though, to raise boys to understand not to pressure girls. I mean, this is this whole rape and non-rape and hazing.
But I'm not talking about rape. I'm talking about you've been dating the guy for 6 months. If you loved me, I mean, we all heard those stories. And And I think that's the thing. It gave you an out, and now
actually that was me saying it.
Okay. If you back in your
back in my day,
am I
Revere
straight?
High.
Am I gay? Am I straight? You know, back in those days, you know, that's one reason I thought it's saying this. It's giving a message. Okay, well, they're handing out condoms.
Yeah,
in the
but you know so what? Now the girl can go ahead and do it.
You act like they're not watching MTV, though. I mean,
no,
the entire
true.
Internet, boys are watching porn at home on their
Which
home computers.
So depressing.
And we're worried about giving them a condom?
My son was not watching porn on his computer. I'm sure
All right.
of that. Oh,
moving
how
along.
Horrifying to even think about that.
To bans and approvals and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I love New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, but he's got his head in the sand on this one. He's going to require everybody in New York City to compost their food scraps, table orts. So you have to separate your food from your papers and your And by the way, is he going to go around delivering biodegradable bags to put this stuff in so that it can be because most people put their scraps if they don't put it through a disposal
in the trash
in a plastic bag. How in the world? So meanwhile, Jeff Keating tells me they do it in Cambridge. I've never heard of this.
Yep. The biggest problem, one of the biggest problems.
Marjorie's got his mouth open. How is that going to work? You know, somebody on the, you know, 5 Park Avenue, and they're going to go, I have to separate my food scraps.
One of the biggest problems in landfills is that the food gets in bags and then this gas, and it's a big problem. But a lot of the rich people already have these $100 composters that you just dump the stuff in. It has a fluid, and you pour it down the drain. So they're not going to be doing it. But if you can get one section of the city to do it, it will end up like saving so much.
He's going to make it like a law.
Well, he makes everything a law.
I mean, we have recycling here. Yeah. It's not the law. You can throw your stuff away if you want. You know.
I would like to have a company that goes around and gets it and then turns it into soil.
Well, that's, I think, the idea.
Well,
so we can stop filling the landfills, which I agree that that's a, you know, that's
you just don't like the law
idea.
Part of it.
Hold on.
Emily Rooney from Greater Boston and Beat the Press tonight at 7 o'clock. Can't wait for Beat the Press. Every Friday night, I just love to watch Beat the Press. What do you put the food in? You put it in a what?
Compost. You know what compost is?
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying.
That's your pile in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
So this is what I'm saying.
Pile your food up in the backyard?
How's this practical in a high rise? Is he going to distribute some kind of biodegradable bags or you know, containers? So you put the food and then it gets picked up separately from the paper and the plastic.
Or you're encouraged to put it down in your garbage
disposal. Well, that is understandable.
Which most people do, which is the better thing for the environment, I think.
It is. I'm not supposed to put my food scraps
You should
scraps
never put your food
garbage.
Scraps in the garbage. Because
I did not even know
I don't
that.
Do that, no.
God, I'm a
No,
look
I put
at
it
this.
Down the...
Yeah, you
but
put
anyway,
it down the garbage
that's
disposal.
Not going to work.
You know, he's got a lot of time of his hands.
He does.
On his hands. I mean,
love him, though.
I mean, I love him, too. I mean, I love the stuff on guns. I don't like guns. But, I mean, I don't think he can be legislating how big people's sodas are. I just don't think he
All
can
right, couple
far.
More here. Vladimir Putin versus Bob Kraft. Who do you believe when it comes to the Super Bowl ring? This is the first Super Bowl ring. He takes a trip to Russia.
Yeah.
Bob Kraft claims he took it off his finger to show to Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin took it and pocketed it and walked away. And now this week, Vladimir Putin comes out and says, no, that's not what happened at all. He offered it to me and I took it.
Anybody who hands a ring to a Russian in Russia and expects to get it back is crazy.
Why would you ever take it off?
Yeah. I mean, it's just...
I got to be with Bob Kraft on this one. Vladimir Putin, you just look at him and you're suspicious.
I'm
you
with know, Bob, but I'm questioning why he took his ring off.
Culturally, there's a lot more gift exchange in other parts of the world than we do. And if you give somebody something, I mean, you know, and somebody said, I read somewhere that it was just one of Bob Kraft's cocktail party stories that, you know, Putin stole it.
Really?
No, but he what happened was this week he told the story again at some black tie dinner in New York or something, and that's when it raised this level.
Again,
and somebody went
back
to Vladimir Putin's, and then they said, wait a minute, he's been telling that story. That's not what happened.
Did Putin take a shirt off and have a bow and arrow and say, I want to go back and give it to him if he wants it?
So you were with Bob Kraft, but what?
I am with him. I believe him, but I'm wondering why he took the ring off his finger in the first place. Wouldn't you just...
I mean, show it to him on your hand. Sue O'Connell is filling in today for Jim Browdy. If you're wondering why you don't hear Jim Browdy here today, that's because he has a day off. I am Marjorie Egan. Emily Rooney is with us talking about her Emily's List. It is not an Emily's List of complaints. It is an Emily's List of observations. Okay, what's next?
All right, finally, liquor store openings. We've had these ridiculous blue laws on the books here in Massachusetts for, you know, centuries. And finally, they allowed liquor sales on Sundays, but not until noon. God forbid you go buy a, you know, six-pack before noon. So once again, all of our neighboring states are way above us on this. You know, they've got liquor sales starting at 10 in the morning. I mean, of course we should be able to buy liquor at 10 in the morning. It's like you go out to do your grocery shopping. It should be probably 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, if the Whole Foods is open, why can't the beer store? What difference does it make?
You know what drove me crazy about moving, allowing liquor to be sold on Sunday was how the small mom-and-pop liquor stores complained that it would cost them too much to staff the businesses if they opened on Sunday. And it's suddenly we're all business friendly and saying, you know, we'll try and make an exception for you so that you can open later. That's what part of the argument was.
Is that right? Where are they on this?
Well, I'm sure their lobby will come forward, but I don't understand why we just don't sell it all the time.
I don't understand either.
You know, when I lived in California, they sold it, and this was like 20 years ago, 25 years. They sold it in grocery stores.
It had a religious underpinning.
Right.
Originally,
no, I understand where it came from, but now it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous. I thought you were going to complain about take your dog to work day.
Oh, you had that on your list.
I did.
I'm not complaining about it. Oh, you love dogs.
Oh, you do? I would love to take your dog to work kind of
office. How about take your
place.
Bear? How about
why,
if we got
why
bears?
Why didn't we do it? Today is it. Why didn't you bring your dog?
I should have brought Harry the Pea, best dog from G to C.
Yeah.
My little 10-pound dog.
Why didn't you bring it?
I should have a big poster of him here in the studio, as he really is adorable. You know,
I mean, the problem with all of these things is, take your kid to work day. I mean, it's just a major distraction.
It is a major distraction. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, GBH, people do all kinds of things. I mean, if their kids are sick, they bring them here instead of leaving them home. So it's like, you know, there's always something going on here. But, you know, it is a distraction. You're spending a lot of time with the kids or the dogs if it's, you know.
I would like it as long as there were no pit bulls.
I had an English bull. Actually, I brought him here once.
You had an English bull?
I did. They're the sweetest dogs.
You know
Pitbulls?
What was it?
English.
English. You know what was shocking in the Boston Gay Pride Parade this year?
What?
A group of people who were trying to change minds about pit bulls, and they had pit bulls in the parade.
Some of them are very sweet.
There was just like
I know, they always 15... say that until they attack you. He was the greatest dog until he ate his owner and his wife. He was terrific. He was the sweetest
thing. I'm a little confused about
until he swallowed my
too,
baby's head.
There's like 1,000 different types of them.
Right.
I mean, is a Staffordshire
ugly
Terrier the same thing?
Well,
and what about that one with the big, you know, that has the
Target pit bull.
Yeah, but that's not a pit bull.
Well, I don't know what it is.
Well, Staffordshire Target Terrier dog. Or
yeah, and a lot of the mongrels that we used to, they have some of this bull in them, this type of dog. But it's this, I think they're talking about the particular...
Pit bull. Mine was an English bull. You know, they're the ones with the big jowls and those are adorable.
I don't like them.
You don't know my dog. You know English bulls.
Yeah, I'm not sure what an English bull is. I just know that those dogs are vicious. I've been knocked over. They think my little 10-pound dog is a rat.
Listen,
and I had a
terrier chihuahua who bit more people than the average pit bull did.
Yeah, but the
so
difference
don't
is
be looking at me
when
with
the
your
terrier
dog.
Chihuahua bites, he can kind of nip your ankle. When the pit bull bites, he's got your whole head
Listen,
in his mouth.
My dear business partner, Jeff Coakley, got bit right through the lip by my little terrier chihuahua.
You know, I have never stopped thinking about that anchor woman who put her face into that dog's face about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He ripped her face like right through, you know, her lip through her
chin. Yeah, they're unbelievable.
I mean, that was some dog
it
that
wasn't a
had been rescued out of a lake or something. Somebody rescued
him.
No, it was not a little dog. It was a big dog. But she goes, oh, isn't he wonderful? And she puts her face right.
Yeah, you don't
do that.
You don't. No, that's not a good move.
No. And never touch anybody else's dog anyway.
No, you have to put your hand out underneath them and they'll let them come to you if they want to come to you. Okay.
All right, stay tuned. We solved
the world.
We have.
Okay, we solved the world. Emily Rooney, Beat the Press. What are you doing on Beat the Press tonight?
Well, we're actually going to be talking about a colleague of yours.
Howie Carr
from Boston. He's getting a lot of blowback for having this monetary deal with John Moderano in the book Hitman. And he actually acted like he was surprised that even his own listeners at RKO were against him, like 2-1. So
really?
Okay,
we'll be tuning in for that. Emily Rooney joins us every Friday at 1 o'clock for open mic and her list of, not complaints, observations. Catch Beat the Press tonight at 7 o'clock talking about Howie Carr and a bunch of other things. On Monday, Eugene Rivers, the Reverend, is with us on Monday at 1 o'clock. Okay. Second wave feminism accomplished a lot in terms of abortion, gay rights, and equal pay. But what about equality at the auto shop? Do women have to pay more than men? That conversation next, 89.7 WGBH.
Dunkin' Donuts has a plan. Special drinks, comfy chairs, free Wi-Fi. Wait. Hasn't this been done before?
You can get on their website and buy a t-shirt that says, "Friends don't let friends drink Starbucks."
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, and roasting the competition. That and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace from APN.
Tonight at 6, here on WGBH Radio.
This program is made possible thanks to you and Subaru of New England, introducing the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. More information available online at SubaruofNewEngland.com. And RingCentral, the business phone system in the cloud. Now with business SMS text messaging, voice conferencing for every employee, and Salesforce.com integration. More at RingCentral.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. Jim Browdy has a day off. Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows is filling in very ably, I should say.
Thank you very much.
You look very well over there in the Jim Browdy seat.
I know. I'm getting used to it.
It's a special Jim seat.
I'm occupying Jim's seat.
It's his throne, actually. But
I know. I'm not sitting in it because I don't want to.
Don't sit.
He
might not like that.
No.
Anyway, research out of Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management finds, surprise, surprise, Sue, that women get charged more at auto repair shops than men do. But it's supposedly not deliberate. It's because mechanics assume that women don't know anything about cars, and therefore they treat women differently. And we want to know from you guys if you think this is true. When you go to the auto repair shop, ladies, do you bring your significant other or your husband to do the negotiating for you? Do you go in there armed with information so they can't take advantage of you? Or do you go in there as a little damsel in distress and get totally cheated, having no idea how much anything costs? Do you feel intimidated? Do you not like the auto mechanic? So numbers are 877-302-8970. I always say R. It's is, Marjorie. 877-301-8970. Do you get taken advantage of at the mechanics? Now, there were some interesting findings in this story that it wasn't necessarily always that women would get taken advantage of. If they were willing to negotiate and barter, then the mechanics were often so stunned to find that they knew anything at all about cars and that they actually knew how much a new radiator costs, they might get as good a deal as the men, correct?
Or a better deal, actually, mm-hmm. that if you had a little bit of information and went to the mechanic and said, well, you want to charge me this, but I think that's too high. How about that?
Yeah.
That they would actually get a good deal or a better deal. So it's all about information. And, you know, I don't know if this carries over to the women don't like to negotiate standpoint. I mean, we see these studies. I hate to negotiate too.
Yeah.
You know, from time to time about buying cars. So you go in and you don't want to go back and forth and do the whole.
It's awful.
I hate it too. But what I do, I have a couple of confessions to make. One is that I used to have my neighborhood mechanic who never had his hands were never dirty, and he always had on Italian loafers, and he had a whole staff.
Really?
And when I would have to go down to him, I would wear a shirt that showed off some of my better assets. And I would put lipstick on, and I would go down and
you
talk to
little
him.
Flirt.
I did. And I would just chat with him, and he would get my car fixed more quickly. Although one day we got in a big fight about something, and I can be a strong personality.
Yeah.
I can be one of those women. And there was a garage full of my neighbors, my men neighbors were all there getting inspection stickers. And this mechanic said to me, I will not have a woman talk to me that way. And the whole garage just, like, the men all turned around, you know, like
really?
They didn't want to see what I was going to do. So I left and I never went back there. And I went up the street to the new guy, though, and I never ask how much it's going to be. That's what I mean, obviously, I know it's going
to
be.
We're supposed to ask.
Well, what I do is I look it up online. I get an estimate. You know, there's a certain book that most mechanics use. They don't actually charge you for the labor. They charge you for what the labor is going to be. So if they charge you for 2 hours and it only takes them 1 hour, they still charge you for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I have a range of what it's going to cost. And then I just go up and I don't say anything. I just let them work on it. And I tell them, do what you need to do. Just
let
me know.
What do you look up online? How much is a radiator.com?
Like I just Google radiator, Ford Focus 2001, and you get a whole bunch of information on how you can get price, you know, what the price would be, what the part price, replacement price. And usually it comes in lower. I mean, I wouldn't guarantee this for everyone, but I also have my look, which I use. I know this is radio and it can't work as well as it would on TV, but whenever I need something from somebody and I don't want to ask, I do this, Marjorie. Ready?
oh, you look like a forlorn little thing.
And I don't say anything. I just look, and then they go, okay, we'll upgrade you to first class. So that's what I do.
Our number is 877-301-8970. So you think this works if you're a gay woman or straight woman, you're a gay woman? Do you think it matters if you're a gay woman going to the auto mechanics?
I'm going to talk in a broad brush here. Uh-huh. I think gay women tend to be a little bit more aggressive about things and are less fearful of pissing guys, getting guys upset. So that would be an example. So I think we tend to try and either get right in their face about it, or we sit back and let and see what's going to happen. But I don't know. Would you take your husband with you or your brother-in-law? You know, guys do come in handy. I do have my brother-in-law a block away from me, who, when I need a man, I get him.
Yeah. I think men feel intimidated in a different way. They feel as though it's part of their whole macho thing to know something about cars.
Yeah.
So they don't want to go in there looking like
But how can you know anything about cars
now? Well,
you
don't anymore. They're all computerized.
I mean, you know, my mom used to change her own oil. I wouldn't have the slightest idea where the oil even comes out anymore.
I did that once. You know what I did? I put water. No, it wasn't. I was changing the oil. The water was overheated. The engine was overheating. Yeah. So I put water in the engine, but I put it where the oil belongs instead of where the water belongs.
How
and
much
you know
did
what?
That cost you?
It was the end of the car.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Okay, 877-301-8970. Ladies, are you taken advantage of at the auto mechanics? Amelia, what a pretty name from Chestnut Hill. What do you think, Amelia?
Hi. So I actually used to live in North Carolina, and my parents are local to Massachusetts, and I bought a car down there, and I had to bring it into a mechanic. The mechanic told me I needed to replace the entire engine, and he was incredibly condescending. I had my father call from Massachusetts, and he gave him, like, the real information and a real price. Even though he wasn't physically there. Yeah.
So I presume that when Dad called, you no longer had to replace the entire engine. Is that what happened?
No, I no longer had to do that. It's funny how that happened.
Oh, God.
And did you go back to that mechanic to do it?
Oh, no, never again.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean, I didn't have the repairs down there either.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amelia, that's a great call. I think that does happen. You know where I feel terribly taken advantage of, and I'm going to get in trouble now for saying this, dealers.
Dealers. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I have a rear windshield wiper that came off, and I went to a dealer who shall remain nameless, who told me $300. And I went to this mobile station right across the street, and I got it for $75.
Oh, no. The challenge, I think, is negotiating between the dealer mechanics and the guy down the street or a woman down the street.
Yeah.
Because you want to have that local mechanic. It's just, I think part of, if you go to a local mechanic who's in your town, you know him, you see him, you can come back and yell at him, you can, you know, build a relationship. I mean, I had a breakup with a mechanic. That's what happened. But I had gone to him for years and years and years, and there was a trust, you know, that had been built. And if I hadn't been, you know, wearing those low-cut shirts, he wouldn't have probably told me that a woman doesn't speak to him that way. I mean, we could have used some counseling. But it is about building a relationship. And from a small business standpoint, I don't condone it. But if someone thinks they can charge you more money to do more work, they're going to do it.
Are you getting taken advantage of at the auto mechanics, ladies? I don't know how, if this is Lita or Lida from Watertown. I'm sorry.
Lita.
Thank you for calling.
That's okay. Hi. Yeah, no, I feel completely taken advantage of. I never go. I send my husband there because I think it's inherently sexist place to be. I had two really awful experiences. One in Edinburgh, where I'm from. And it was before I got married, and my mum and I were getting, I had a Volkswagen repaired, and the guy was just so disgusting. And he said to me, if I fix your car, will you come back with me to mine for dinner? Like, my mum in the car, it was just.
Was he good looking? Was he at least good looking? No, no. You know, marrying a mechanic isn't a bad idea, though.
Yeah.
No, like a plumber or a electrician, they're all good.
So what was your second bad experience?
Well, it's actually in Watertown, and a guy, my mum and I, my mum moved over to live with us, and she had cancer, and she passed away now.
I'm sorry.
And she just got her second diagnosis, and we had this banged up Volvo, and we took it into this repair shop. And the guy, my mum and I were both really upset, obviously, and we said to the guy, you know, she'd had this second diagnosis, and he said, what, is it terminal?
Oh!
Was that going to make a difference in the estimate? Or?
Later.
Yeah.
Oh,
the whole thing was completely disgusting.
Yeah.
So I send my husband, who gets ripped off as well because he's, you know, not very good at
it. Later, thank you very much for the call, and I hope you have better luck in the future with mechanics. You know, this is a thing about going into an auto mechanic's shore, or it's also true for walking by construction workers. You know, when you're 20 and I do remember this,
yeah.
the word to the wise is you walk four blocks to mm-hmm. avoid going by the construction workers or to go into the auto mechanics by yourself.
Do you know?
Then when you're 30,
yeah.
you cross the street to avoid them. Mm-hmm. Then when you're 40,
you parade or 45, by them.
You walk right by them and you hope one of them looks up from his lunch bucket. You know what I'm saying?
Do you know Sue what O'Connell? I used to say to when I went to Emerson College? I'd take the from Revere to the Green Line and I'd walk down Arlington Street and there was yeah. this construction going on and I didn't mind them saying things, but every now and then someone would cross the line and I would stop and turn around and walk up to him and say, "Is that what you would like someone to say to your daughter?"
Oh, aren't you courageous?
And they would just look at me, and then he'd call me some bad name, and I'd go on my way. But the other day, I was in Southie, and there was a construction worker dancing. He had, like, music on, and he was shaking his booty, and I rolled down the window, and I whistled at him. And he was loud. It was good. It was a great little Boston moment.
Okay. We didn't solve that one,
no,
did we?
No, we didn't.
I think.
But why isn't it just – why is it mechanics? Why isn't it, like, you know – construction. Women do well with construction. We have to get back into this at some point.
Okay. Up next is our weekly news quiz. We're very excited about this because we have sort of, in honor of the election Tuesday for United States Senate, we have an elephant expert challenging a donkey expert. It's going to be much fun. A political proxy war. That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Barbershop guys have been watching the NBA Finals with a nuanced eye and maybe a little Cleveland hateration.
He's best known as a choker, you know, maybe an all-night toker, but yo, this brother, you know, he's just not particularly good at the point.
The Barbershop guys weigh in on Game 7 next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you. An in-you window in Natick with the Hunter Douglas Lighter Side of Living event featuring cordless LightRise Blackout Duet Arcatella as well as motorized shades controlled from your smartphone. InYouWindow.com. And Masterpiece. Lewis must work with a different partner to solve a murder whose suspects include Lewis's former colleague. Don't miss Inspector Lewis from Masterpiece. Sunday at 9 on WGBH 2.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. This is our weekly news quiz. Jim is not here, but I'm going to be in charge of the news quiz with Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows, who's been nice enough to sit in for Jim Bridey. The theme, because of the election on Tuesday between Ed Markey, the congressman, and Gabriel Gomez, is a political proxy war. You know, we have a elephant-donkey kind of deal. So, our elephant expert from formerly of the Buttonwood, I used to live down there. You know,
did you really?
Yes, I did.
That's
Fall
a nice
River,
place.
Next
yeah.
door in New Bedford, where the Buttonwood Zoo is, and you used to be there for many years.
Right.
And you are an elephant expert, and you are representing the noble pachyderm. Is that
yeah,
correct?
Can I be a bleeding heart liberal donkey?
Certainly.
I mean, elephant.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's me.
You, whatever
yes.
you can be, whatever kind of elephant you want
okay,
to be.
That's me.
And then on the other side, we have Judy Ballantyne representing. I think this is so funny. She's the founding member of Save Your Ass Long Ear Rescue, and you are representing the donkey side of things. Now, please, Judy Ballantyne, what is Save Your Ass Long Ear Rescue?
Well, I'm one of the founding members.
Okay, one of the founding members.
I give a lot of credit to Ann Firestone and Gail Lever. It's New England's only 501c3 nonprofit donkey and mule rescue.
And I didn't even realize that donkeys and mules needed rescuing. I mean, what's going on
they
in the donkey
do,
mule
like
world?
All many animals.
Yeah.
And so we rescue donkeys and mules that need to get into better circumstances. It could be through something as simple as a divorce or sale of a home, you know, someone relocating, or people surrender their animals to auction houses, and some of those end up going to the kill buyers and off to the slaughterhouses. So we get our donkeys and mules from all different situations.
Do they? Are they still working animals? Are they still?
Many of them are pets.
Yeah.
Many of the mules that come through come from Amish country.
Mm-hmm.
We have a huge, gorgeous Belgian mule that's our mascot up at Save Your Ass, which is located in South Acworth, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now,
and Judy and I actually know each other from before because one of
this
her,
is wild.
Yeah, one of her donkeys is one of is a friend to one of our elephants.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Bill, I want to. Elephants are fascinating to me because are they not? They actually have self awareness. Is that correct? That they that they can tell looking in a mirror that it is actually them, and that's different from many almost all animals, right?
I think more animals do it than we know.
Okay.
But yeah, they're one of the few that's actually been scientifically demonstrated that they do that.
But you know what else I read this morning when I was preparing for your arrival here is that elephants have a communication thing that we just can't hear. I did not know that, Dr. Bill.
Yeah, that Katie Payne, Liz Thomas, and I were the people who discovered that like decades ago, I'm embarrassed to say. But yeah, they speak infrasonically and sounds too low in pitch for us to hear. Actually,
what do they say?
Well, we don't know. We're still looking into that. But take
a left at the stream. At the stream.
Actually, you know what? They might be doing that. Yeah. One of the reasons they probably use this is for long distance communication. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy named Rowan Martin in Zimbabwe who has been tracking elephants for years and years and years, and finds that even when they are too far apart to see each other. The winds are the wrong direction for them to be able to smell each other. They still move in a coordinated way.
Wow.
And so it might be
like GPS.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Okay, you guys ready for our quiz?
Okay.
Are you ready to go? Do you want to start,
sure.
Sue O'Connell? You can pick Dr. Bill.
I'm going to talk to Dr. Bill since he's right here.
Judy.
Okay, you ready, Dr. Bill?
Yeah.
Here's your question.
Uh-oh.
Patriots owner Bob Kraft recently told a story about meeting Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. Here's a new story about it.
Was that jealousy on Putin's face when New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft showed off his on a visit to Russia in 2005? He put it on and he goes, I can kill someone with this. He put it in his pocket and three KGB guys got around him and walked out.
So here's your question. What did Vladimir Putin steal, according to Kraft?
His Super Bowl ring.
That's right. Very good.
That is correct. Congratulations to you, doctor. Okay. You ready for this one? Don't be nervous, Judy Ballantyne.
Okay.
I love to say this. Save your ass long ear rescue. By the way, do people have donkeys and mules around here, or are these? I mean, I've never seen a donkey and mule.
There are lots of them, and
in Massachusetts.
Oh, absolutely. We've got three. We live in Dover, and there are many of them in Dover.
Wow.
They're around. People really love them.
And why do they love them? I mean, I always think of donkeys and, like, everybody's in the Grand Canyon out in Colorado riding around.
Well, animals, they do make great pets. They're kind of like big dogs in a way. They're very intelligent. They're very curious. They'll soak up affection.
Really?
Yeah.
Because horses aren't.
No, they're very different than horses.
Yeah.
And
but horses are, too. I got to put in a plug for
horses.
Yeah,
you're right.
You don't think that they're dumb?
But I think they're they're more curious
except
than
for
horses.
Secretariat, of course.
Don't you think they're a little more curious than
horses? I mean, Judy and I were talking. We had a donkey at our place, and when I was in Pittsburgh, we had a guard donkey for our goats. Who was
really?
And just like Judy said, it was like he was wonderful. You'd be working on the fence, and he'd have his head over your shoulder, and you'd have to not be careful not to hit him with the hammer because he wanted to see what you were doing.
Or if you leave the hammer on the ground, he'll pick it up and take it away.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're
do
awesome.
Do they want to come and sleep in the house with you, or are they okay
Mine
outside?
Used to come in the house. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they'd come right in.
He wouldn't sleep in your bed.
No. But they used to come in, then my mother moved in with us, and we didn't have the room.
Oh, okay.
So.
Do you want me to check the Brookline ordinances for you? Marjorie, so you can get one.
That's right. I'm lonesome. Okay, ready for your question, Judy?
Okay.
Okay. This is a clip. It's an improv asylum comedy sketch featuring Keith Lockhart. Mr. Lockhart, can you get me a good seat on the S? Oh, it's a clip. I'm reading the script. This is a clip. Here's the clip. Go ahead.
Mr. Lockhart, can you get me a good spot on the Esplanade for the Pops concert on the 4th?
I'm afraid not.
Can't you make one appear with your magic wand?
It's not a magic wand, you moron. It's a baton.
Listen, I know you're a wizard. Your secret's safe with me.
Not a wizard. I'm a conductor.
Okay.
Enough of this. Arpeggio lagamente!
Okay, here's the question, Judy. Why is Keith Lockhart and the Pop's 4th of July concert in the news this week?
Because they're not going to broadcast them on national TV
this year. That is correct. Two in a row.
Very good. You guys are kicking. I got a little crush on Keith Lockhart, you know.
You do?
Yeah, I did this quiz with him a month ago, and I've just been dreaming about him ever since.
It's because of his magical use of Latin.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. Okay, here's your question. Fox News welcomed a contributor back into the fold this past Monday. Here she is talking about what she's been up to.
I am doing great. Very busy, of course, with 5 kids, 2 beautiful grandkids. Writing a book about Christmas and pushing back on the politically correct who would try to take Christ out of Christmas.
Who is this contributor?
That was the Mama Grizzly. That's Sarah Palin.
That's right. Sarah Palin getting back on the airwaves. All right. We're doing great here.
This is our special, I want to tell everybody, political proxy quiz because of the election on Tuesday, even though not many people are paying attention to it. Jared Markey and Gabriel Gomez are running for the United States Senate. So we've got Dr. Bill Langbauer, representing the noble pachyderm. And we have got Judy Ballantyne, one of the founding members of the Save Your Ass Long Ear Rescue, representing donkeys. Okay. Here is my question. Where am I? Here we go. This is a newscast from yesterday. The question is, what is this newscaster, talking about?
State Highway Administrator Frank DePaula says the 52-year-old needs a lot of rehab work. To the deck, curb line gutters, new wall panels. That means the will be closed for a while.
Do you know what the newscaster's talking about,
It's the Callahan Tunnel.
That is correct. Hey. You guys are really doing much better than usual. Usually everybody gets everything wrong.
You know, the Callahan Tunnel is a little bit older than I am. And as a Revere kid, we would go through it all the time. And I remember when it was brand spanking new. It was like, you know, nice and shiny. And then it took me a long time to realize there were two tunnels, the Callahan Tunnel and the Sumner Tunnel. The Sumner Tunnel comes out of East Boston into Boston, and the Callahan goes into Boston.
Very good.
Into the airport.
I had no idea which one went either way. Thank you very much.
That's what I'm here for. You're welcome.
Okay, next question for Dr. Bill.
Okay, this is Texas Governor Rick Perry isn't the only person to have a spacey moment on national TV. This is from a contest last weekend where one of the competitors asked how to make sure women and men get paid the same.
I think we can relate this back to education and how we are continuing to try to strive to figure out how to create jobs right now. That is the biggest problem. And I think especially the men are seen as the leaders of this. And so we need to try to figure out how to create education better.
What contest was this from? And for a bonus point, who was this contestant?
This was one of those beauty pageants, and I'm going to make her feel better by being ignorant about it. Also, it was one of the beauty pageants, and it was like Miss some state.
What do you think, judges? It was
Miss, you get half a point.
Okay, Miss. Okay. It was the Miss America pageant, and that was Miss Utah, proving why women shouldn't get paid as much money as men.
No, that's right. And actually, I did see this, and somebody correlated it to how much you spent. The state spend per student.
Oh,
and Utah was at the very bottom of the.
Yeah,
of
she
the,
also said men were in charge, so it's all their fault that we're not getting
that
paid
was
enough.
Very
that's
painful.
Why we're not being paid, and who's in charge of that? So
okay, you ready, Judy, for your next question?
Ready.
Okay, what two Boston sports stars is ESPN Stephen Smith talking about here?
Both of them could end up in Los Angeles, and if you have an opportunity to have both of them with Chris Paul, keep Blake Griffin, and be in Los Angeles, California, where there's a bevy of golf courses, by the way, that is something that would be incredibly pleasing.
You a sports star?
Not really, but I read the newspaper.
Okay, great. You know what they're talking about?
I think the Celtics.
You are correct. It is the Celtics. You know what?
Rivers.
Yes.
And Garnett.
Oh, this is an impressive group.
Kids, do you see why the newspaper is important?
Yeah. My husband's a huge basketball fan. I brought him along for backup, but I remembered that I read that.
Okay. Good job.
Okay. All right.
I think it's just smart people have donkeys.
Yes, that might be it. That
or
could be
elephants.
It too.
Or both.
So I think, Dr. Bill, that we know what your answer is going to be, but how do you feel about the elephants in circuses?
You know, I think it's a I think it's very difficult to do a good job with elephants in circuses. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to give them the care they need. But I'm not going to say it's impossible. I think you got to do it by a case-by-case basis. But I think if you're going to make a generalization, it's not a good idea.
You know, I've had anytime I've been near an elephant, and I have to admit I've gone on an elephant ride, you know, and I've always felt like if they really didn't want to be there, they wouldn't be there. I mean, I know that that's a gross generalization, but it's sort of like being with a dog in a way, you know, that there is...
Well, yeah, in some respects, that's true. I mean, even at zoos, I don't want to make anybody apprehensive, but I mean, if an elephant really wanted to leave, they'd leave.
Yeah.
And but they don't.
They don't. Yeah. So there you go. All right. Here's your question. This is from a recent newscast out of New York City. It's an interview with dietitian Sharon Richer.
Today we're in Times Square at the McDonald's location to introduce their new menu item, the Egg White Delight, which is made with an English muffin that has 8 grams of whole grains, and it has only 7 grams of fat, has 18 grams of protein from the egg whites and from the low-fat Canadian bacon.
Okay, here's your question. Why is the Egg White Delight among other processed foods in the news this week? This is a toughie. You really had to be paying attention to get this one.
Because the educational system of this country is needs more men and...
Very good. No, that's wrong. Do we want to throw it over to get an extra point? Yeah, let's go ahead. What's the answer?
I think it was because has a natural shape to it.
I think that's worth a point.
Yeah.
Yes,
correct.
The Associated Press has reported that food manufacturers are manipulating processed foods to look more homemade. The Egg White Delight is designed so that the egg whites fall over the sides of the English muffin. Processed turkey is being cut rough, uneven slices so that it looks like it was carved right off the turkey. And even our friends over at Domino's are cutting slices unevenly so it looks artisanal, which I just love that word you just use for anything you make at home or want to make. So there you go, just trying to trick you some more.
Okay, Judy, you are ahead. You have 4 points, and Dr. Bill has 3 points. You could go into a big, big lead with the correct answer to this question.
Uh-oh.
We're going to play you a montage from a big event which was televised this week. And the question is, what event is this montage from?
37 years to do that. 37 years. 37 years to do that. 37 years to do that. He has 37 years down in the Congress.
Do you know who that was, what that event was?
That was the Gomez and Markey debate.
That is correct.
Yes.
That was my favorite moment. I think Gabriel Gomez must have said 37 years, Ed Markey's been in Congress about 25 times. If I was counting them, I lost count.
You know, here's a startling statistic. If people actually voted, they wouldn't need term limits.
That's a very good point.
You know, it's just kind of crazy like that. If you, you know, it's crazy.
Okay,
crazy.
Now we have to move on to the lightning round. Okay?
Oh, I have one more. Are we done?
No, we have to move to the lightning round now.
Okay,
it's time for it. So we have Dr. Bill. We're asking you questions about the classic book Don Quixote,
okay.
And Judy. We're asking you questions about the Disney classic Dumbo. You want to start with Judy over there, Sue O'Connell?
Yes. Okay. You ready, Judy?
It's been so long since I've seen
you can do it.
That.
Just close your eyes and picture Dumbo. The movie Dumbo was based on an 8-page book. In the film, Dumbo's friend was Timothy Q. Mouse. Timothy was based on what character in the book? Was it A, Dumbo's friend Red Robin, B, Dumbo's friend Seymour the Squirrel, or C, Dumbo's friend Mortimer Marmot? Red Robin, Seymour the Squirrel, or Mortimer Marmot?
I'm going to have to guess.
Okay, go ahead.
I will guess the squirrel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
It was Red Robin.
Oh, he was my third guess.
Okay, Bill.
Okay.
Pressure's on. Judy has 5 points.
I'm feeling it, actually.
You have 3 points.
Wait, how did she get an extra point?
I don't know.
She has 4 points.
No,
I'm keeping score here.
They're cheating in the studio there. Yeah, it's 5-3, I think. Is that the score?
No, it's 4-3.
4-3?
I think Bill's right.
Is it 4-3? Okay, whatever the score is.
Elephants
ready?
Never forget.
Yeah, and I'm not competitive at all.
Okay. What among these books did Cervantes use as a source while writing Don Quixote? A, The Golden Ass, one of the earliest known novels from late classical antiquity. B, Peregrinations of the Godless, a 12th century epic poem by Hector de Castile. Or C, El Sol, an 11th century astronomer's guide by Raphael de Pantin.
Can you give them to me again, real quick?
A, Golden Ass.
Nope.
okay, peregrinations of the goddess, that one. OSB. In fact, it was the golden ass.
Damn it.
Okay. That's okay. Now, we either have a tie or we have a win by Judy. I'm not really sure.
I think we have a
tie. What are the stakes? What do you win?
We have two more questions. Oh, we have two more questions.
Right,
oh, I thought it was all over.
Oh, no, it's okay. Still going. Here you go, Judy.
I'll
ready?
I'll give you $5 to get this one wrong.
Judy, Dumbo was a box office hit. It won over the critics and became one of Disney's most popular animated films. Which of these is a true mark of the film's huge success? One, the Shangri-Las, famous for Leader of the Pack, recorded the song Leader of the Pachyderm. Two, Frank Sinatra sang a duet of Fly Me to the Moon with the animated Dumbo on the Judy Garland Show. Or three, in 1941, for its December issue, Time magazine planned to name Dumbo Mammal of the Year, a play on its annual Man of the Year, but the plans were shelved because of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
I am going to say Frank Sinatra singing along with
And I don't have the answer here.
Yeah, we don't have the answer, you guys. Somebody's going to have to tell us what the answer is.
It was not that.
Thank
Harbor.
You, Judy. Thanks.
Mammal of the Year.
Yeah, Mammal of the Year, yeah. Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
Really?
All right. All right, Dr. Bill.
Okay.
Ready?
In
the year 2000, there was a made-for-TV movie based on Don Quixote. Who played Don Quixote? A, John Larroquette. B, Dick Van Dyke. Or C, John Lithgow?
Which year was it?
2000.
Mm. I can see how he's thinking.
Yeah. Yes. John Larroquette.
John Lithgow.
Oh,
that was a
John. I would have guessed John Lithgow.
You would have guessed John Lithgow.
Well, so you would have beat me by two then.
Okay. That's right. This means Gomez wins the election on Tuesday, but I really don't think that's going to happen. That's going to happen.
Wait, no.
Do we have a tie? Bill says there is a tie. The judges are disputing this.
No, I don't say there's a tie, but I'm the donkey.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that would be...
That'd be Mark he's going
you know
to win.
Okay.
And
I threw this.
I threw this to make sure that was the result.
Basically, people have to vote on Tuesday or else this is what government looks like.
Now, let me ask you guys both something before you go here. Is there some way that people who are interested in Save Your Ass Long Ear Rescue can get in touch or a website or something like that?
Absolutely.
Judy Valentine?
The website is saveyourassrescue.org.
Okay.
So that's all one word, saveyourassrescue.org. And like us on Facebook. At Facebook, it's SYA Rescue because we couldn't use ass.
Okay.
Oh, Facebook.
Dr. Bill, is there any way anyone can follow your exploits as an elephant expert? DrBill.com?
You can look at me up on Facebook.
Okay, look it up on Facebook. It is Dr. Bill Langbauer, LANGBAUER, and it's fascinating stuff about these elephants that I had no idea about. Thank you both for coming in. Elephant expert Dr. Bill Langbauer and Judy Ballantyne, a founding member of Save Your Ass Long Ear Rescue, is representing the donkey. And I want to thank all you guys for listening to yet another edition of Boston Public Radio. Thank you, Sue O'Connell from Bay
Egan.
Windows, for sitting in for Jim Browdy, who will be back on Monday. Till then, you can follow us on Twitter at Boss Public Radio and at Jim Browdy and at Marjorie Egan and Twitter. Thank you, Will Roselip. Thank you, John Parker. Thank you, Chelsea Murs, for helping us out. You can also find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. Our show is a production of WGBH Radio, and thank you again for tuning in. Thank you again, Sue O'Connell, for filling in. Thanks for listening. I am Marjorie Egan. See you on Monday.